Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 748 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is an Aftershock Monday episode, and today I'm going to be giving you a preview of A Walk Through Hell number 8 and also Oberon number 2. Both of those issues come out this coming Wednesday, March 6th. You'll be able to find them in your local comic shops, and so I'm going to give my impressions of the two issues and the series so far, and this will be spoiler-free. So let me go ahead and start with A Walk Through Hell. It's from writer Garth Ennis. We have co-creator and artist Goran Sadzuka, colors by Yves Forcina, letters by Rob Steen. This issue, we get sort of the origin of Paul Carnahan, the figure that's been at the center of the investigation from agents McGregor and Shaw, and sort of triggered this whole series in a way. That investigation into the murders of children really was kind of the impetus of this story and kind of the horribleness of it. And in this issue, it's specifically even mentioned by Carnahan himself about the nature of evil. Is that what this issue is all about? Is that what this story is all about? What is evil? What is, you know, what are we capable of as humans? And can evil be learned? Isn't it inherent in who we are? Some of us are evil, some not. So it's an interesting intellectual exercise. But ultimately, it may not be as important to the story as it first appears. It just depends on how Garth Ennis sort of finishes it up, so to speak. But I will say this. When you go back and reread the previous issues, the further along the story gets, the more you get out of going back and reading the previous 7 issues, or previous however many issues. I imagine by the time issue 10 comes out, if you go back and read issue 7, you're going to get more out of it than, you know, if you read it when it first came out. So as you get a bigger picture and as more of the puzzle pieces fit into place, I think a lot of what happened earlier starts to fall into place. And it also has to do with the story structure that Garth Ennis is using. He's using a non-linear story structure, and there are times where he flashes back to moments in the investigation or conversations that some of our characters had that took place previously. And he doesn't do it really overtly. Like, there's no, you know, dialogue box or text box that says, well, this is 2 years ago, this is 5 years ago, this is 2017 or whatever. It's just, and the coloring is not even different. You just have to kind of understand from context what's going on. And it's done well. I mean, Garth Ennis is a good writer. So I think that you're able to understand and that these are flashbacks. So there's a couple things going on in the story, as I said. First of all, due to the non-linear nature and the fact that these characters, they're all aware of what happened in the past, obviously. But because Ennis is not spoon-feeding us the story and he's not telling the story in a linear fashion, there are some things that when you read them, you just don't have context, and you don't know exactly where they fit into that overall big picture. And so, again, as I said, you may not quite understand, but you just have to keep reading. And then if you go back, like I did, you know, I got the preview copy for issue 8, read it, thought, wow, this is, okay, now we're starting to get somewhere. Now this is becoming disturbing, and some of the things, you know, as I said, Carnahan's origin, some of the things he says, some of the things he did are pretty gross, I'll say, to put it lightly. and you know, just hearing what he went through, and again, starting to overtly think about and examine what it means to be evil. So there's all that inherent in this issue, and I finished reading it and thinking, man, this might be the most brutal issue so far. And again, not from anything that's overt. A lot of it is subtle. It's a subtle discomfort. But then I decided, you know what? Let me go back and reread the series from the beginning, the first seven issues, just to kind of get an idea and a sense of the progression of the story. And, you know, when we had Mike Martz on, he talked about how subtle this horror is. And Goren Tsuduka feels the same way. And Garth Ennis tends to be a little more in your face with the things that he writes. So it's interesting that he's choosing to play this out a little more slowly. And again, it's not bloody or gory or anything, but there is tension there, and it is uncomfortable. It is a horror comic. It is scary in a way. And like a lot of things in life, you're going to get out of it what you put into it. And if you put in a lot and spend time thinking about it, I think it gets even more scary. So I went back and I reread all of the first seven issues. And yeah, like I said, a lot of the dialogue and what was going on with the investigation and such, it makes so much more sense to me now. I got a lot more out of it, and I feel like I have a better understanding of the entire story. So a couple things. I mean, you get a more value for your comic dollar because it's inherently rereadable. And in a way, it's almost like reading the story for the first time again, because now that you have context about certain events in the story, you can get more out of it. It also, you have more insight into the feelings and the emotions, sort of the terror of the overall story and the feelings and emotions of the characters as they're stuck in this warehouse. And is it hell? Is it not? And that idea, that question that first gets overtly raised in the story in this issue 8, what does it mean to be evil? Why would anyone desire to be evil? Is it something beyond human? Is it something that has infected or infested or taken up a residence inside Paul Carnahan that is evil? Is it something beyond us? So still a lot of questions to be answered, still a lot of mysteries. And is Shaw being punished for what she did? Is McGregor along for the ride? Is he being punished as well? Again, a lot of questions to be answered, but one thing's for sure, this is, as I said, a very disturbing issue. It's not for the faint of heart. It's certainly a mature title, but it's also, like a lot of Garth Ennis things, they make you uncomfortable, but they're also really compelling. The characterization, the hooks that he puts in the story, you know, the mysteries, the fully realized characters in terms of the way they're fleshed out. And there's also some twists and turns. Some of them have been a little more obvious. We're getting the hint of something in this issue which could really flip the story on its head. And again, it'll be one of those things where once the revelation is made, you go back and reread previous issues and you'll see that the clues were there all along. So in that way, it's really smart storytelling, and it really showcases the skill and the talent that Garth Ennis has. You know, he's a legendary writer. Not that we need any proof of his talent, but it's clearly evident here. And you don't really think of Garth Ennis as someone who experiments with storytelling. I have to confess that I don't read everything the guy writes. I do tend to enjoy the things that I do read of his. I find that I haven't read his Punisher stuff. I haven't read all of his John Constantine things. I do tend to gravitate more toward his creator-owned or independent work, more so than anything else. like I said, I haven't noticed a tendency to experiment or try different sort of storytelling styles. But again, I do very much enjoy the things that I do read by him. So it's interesting to see something like this, where it's a non-linear story, and he's taking advantage of kind of a slower paced story, a subtler story, to build tension, to build the horror aspect of the narrative, and to make it suspenseful, to keep us guessing. We still don't know exactly what's going on in that warehouse on Long Beach Pier. It still is a mystery. What is the warehouse? What is happening? Where are Agent Sean McGregor? Are they still alive? How is this happening? There's still so much to still be revealed. As far as the artwork goes, man, Goren Suzuka, perfect artist for this story. I think that the emotion that he puts in the faces is really where his artwork shines. You know, I've seen Goren's work before. You know, he's a veteran. He's a very talented artist, and he's even done horror before. But you know, as I mentioned, even he has said that this is a more subtle sort of story in terms of horror than he's done before, and certainly more subtle than Garth Ennis's horror stories tend to be. But what Suzuka's able to do, because this is in a way a police procedural, in a way, there are some mundane aspects to it. There are some everyday aspects to it. And as I said, it's a more subtle horror story from Ennis, so sometimes it can be hard to bring a sense of tension or suspense or horror and have it be impactful when you're kind of limited, when you're drawing more mundane things. There's just these FBI agents in suits. They're investigating crimes. They're looking at houses or, cars. You're in a warehouse where they're just walking between crates. And again, there's not a whole lot to work with there. And so you have to give Suzuka a lot of credit for the expressions on people's faces and the body language, because for the most part, this is sort of a talking head story. And he's able to keep the suspense, build the suspense, and create atmosphere in a way that is very skillful and not obvious. And hand in hand with that, you have to give a lot of credit to Eve Zvorchina, the colorist, for helping to set the mood and the tone, especially, as I said, they're in this warehouse and it's just dark colors. It's just black, other than the light coming from their flashlight. But he takes advantage of the use of shadow and illustrates or colors Suzuka's art very well in a way that helps us feel the emotion that these characters are experiencing. So again, I think it's masterful storytelling. It far and away is one of the best, most complex, interesting, and layered titles that's coming out from Aftershock. I don't hear a lot of people talking about it, at least not in the way that I think people should be talking about it, because this is sort of a masterclass in horror, in my mind. I mean, it is some really disturbing stuff, and I think now that we've kind of gotten through the preliminaries, so to speak, I think that this issue 8 really raises the story to the next level, and I have a feeling it's going to start getting a lot more disturbing. There's been tension, there's been a sense of menace and a sense of, yeah, this is scary, there's something unknown going on, a little tingle at the back of your spine, and I feel like with this issue we're beginning to reach the next stage where the monster, whatever that might be, the menace, the threat, is about to be revealed. And once we realize what it is, it's going to be inherently scary, and it's going to kind of raise the level of fear, I think, is where we're at. So, you know, I highly recommend the story. It is for mature readers. It's not for the faint of heart, but incredible nuanced artwork from Goran Sadzuka, great color work from Yves Forcina, and mostly just this story. The story from Innes, as I said, so complex. The reveals are interesting. The nonlinear storytelling, he's really taken advantage of that to use it as a tool to pace the story in such a way that the little reveals are doled out in a steady pace and not in a linear fashion, so that you think you understand what's going on, and then when you find out more later, it fills in and fleshes out the story even further. So, again, issue 8, not for the faint of heart. Overall, it's a great story. Recommend it to everybody. And yeah, it's really, really quite something. All right, let me move on to the next book that's coming out this Wednesday from Aftershock. It's Oberon number 2 from writer Ryan Parrott. We have art by Miloš Slavkovic. Letters are by Charles Pritchett. So we had Ryan on to talk about the first issue of Oberon. This is the story of the king of the fairies, so to speak, and how he's trying to regain his throne. He was betrayed by his wife Titania for reasons that we're not privy to yet. And he's attempting to regain his throne. And the way he's doing that is he has befriended and taken under his wing a child from Earth who is destined to have some great momentous event happen later in her life. She's supposed to be a savior or a hero of sorts. And rather than let her fulfill that prophecy, it appears that Oberon is going to use her and the powers that she has to help regain his throne. And so in the second issue, he's trying to get a better understanding of what powers and abilities this child, Bonnie, has. So it's an interesting story. It's very much fantasy. When we had Ryan on to talk about it, we were talking about the artwork and comparing it to a cartoon called Pirates of Dark Water, which, if you're familiar with that, that's very much the style of art that Miloš is going with. It's a beautiful book to look at. Ryan's a big believer in the ability of fantasy stories to be relatable and to tell a great coming-of-age story. He specifically referenced Labyrinth and Dark Crystal and the Never-Ending Story as sort of inspirations for this. It's not the most original concept in the world that, you know, a child, as they're learning about who they are, what their identity is, what their abilities are, and to be thrust into the role of a protagonist in a fantasy setting and to try to save the day. So couple that with this Oberon character who doesn't seem like he wears a white hat. He's not a hero, but he doesn't seem to be a villain either. He clearly is very self-centered and very narcissistic, and his goal is to regain his throne, and he's going to do that by whatever means are necessary, and clearly he believes he's justified in what he's doing. And so it makes for an interesting dichotomy, because you have this a sort of innocent, naive child who is putting her faith in this king of the fairies, and he's kind of showing her the ropes and being a mentor to her. And she doesn't see that maybe he doesn't have her best interest at heart. You know, it's easy for us to see that on the outside looking in. So it's been a wonderful start to this story so far. Really interesting. As I mentioned, the artwork by Miloš Slavkovic is awesome. It's the second issue takes place completely in the fantasy world, the land of the fairies, and we're starting to understand the breadth of this world, because it seems like it's a very broad world. There's a lot of interesting characters, and we've only just barely begun to scratch the surface. And Bonnie, it seems, the young child is all in, and she seems to take it in stride that she's here, and she's been recruited by the King of the Fairies, and she's you know, naturally inquisitive and curious, and she mentions about how she's always felt like she was different and there was something more. And so it seems like that may be part of the reason that she's able to sort of accept this radical change to her world. But you wonder, and it may be something that's at the very heart of the story, and or it might be something that's more in the background, a plot thread that runs throughout the story, and that is the trust between Bonnie and Oberon. She knows that she doesn't know him that well, but it seems like she has this inherent trust of him because he rescued her in that first issue. And so how far will he be able to take that trust and take advantage of that trust? Because again, we know that for Oberon, Bonnie is just a means to an end. He just wants to use her to regain his throne. And then at that point, he would either discard her, or if he thought she could still be useful, he would keep her around. We know that there have been plenty of hints in the first couple issues that fairies are known for their deals that they make, their cons, if you will. They're always looking to sort of play tricks on people and come out on the, you know, get the better end of the deal, so to speak. They're like fantasy's version of con men. So and we see that in this issue, how Oberon seems to kind of know everybody. Plenty of people owe him favors, and it almost seems like that's the only reason he ever does anything, is because then he gets to have he gets to call in the markers later. He gets to have people owe him. So he's a very fully realized character, but quite complex, and he certainly lives in that gray area. As far as Bonnie goes, she's also very interesting, and as she begins to learn more about herself and discover who she is and what abilities she has, we're sort of learning about her as she takes that journey. So the first issue was great. Second issue, I feel, sort of turns the story just slightly into being more focused on character as opposed to setting. I think the first issue was sort of, we were being introduced to the characters, and we were getting set up for the story itself. And that's what I mean by setting, not necessarily where the story takes place, but kind of the story setting, the framework of the story that Ryan Parrott was going to is going to tell. And with the second issue, we really pivoted a little bit to start talking about characterization, and we start seeing just through the dialogue and the actions of Bonnie and Oberon specifically, we're starting to get an idea of who they are and what we can expect from them in terms of what decisions they would make, or which direction they would go when faced with a particular issue or a problem. And we get a little characterization too for some of the supporting characters as well. So it's been a really fun story so far. I think I mentioned when the first issue came out, great for younger readers. And Ryan and I talked about that as well when we had him on. And I see no difference in that with this second issue. Again, I think it's, great bedtime story for, 10, 11, 12 year olds. There's no, overt violence in it. There's not, a lot of blood or gore or anything like that. And so, if you're looking for something for a younger reader to try to get them hooked and get them reading, I certainly would recommend this. And again, the artwork very much in the cartoon like vein, and the color work is great as well. It feels like fantasy, and it feels organic, and it feels very beautiful. There are a couple of dwellings in this issue, which are really, really great. It's kind of the treehouse, if you will, that Oberon lives in. It's got a very organic feel. And then there's another dwelling later on that's basically made out of a giant's skull that we get to see. That's also a really great visual. So great job by Miloš Slavković, both in terms of the art, you know, the line work, as well as his color work. It's, you know, a lot of browns and greens and kind of earth tones, which is very suitable for a, you know, a fairy land where it's a lot of magic and you want warm colors, nature, things like that. You're not going to see a lot of grays and blacks and blues. That those kind of colors are, you know, more urban, more cityscape, futuristic, things like that. This is the exact opposite of that. Browns and greens and tan colors and the like. And again, it gives it that organic sort of natural feel. You know, even the houses, as I mentioned, even Oberon's house is it's a treehouse. You know, it's alive to some extent. And so you want those colors that sort of reflect nature. And, you know, it's not enough for Miloš Slavković to do the line work, creating these interesting fantasy-looking characters. We get to see goblins. We get to see some other fairy folk. And they look suitably humanoid, but just, a little bit different enough to invoke that fantasy feel. So he's doing an incredible job with that. Great layouts within the panels, really wonderful facial expressions that convey emotion. And then on top of that, this fantastic color work. So I really have to give him a lot of credit. I have to think that Ryan is like super excited every time pages come in and he gets to see Miloš's work unfold and this this world he's created come to life. It's got to be a pretty fantastic feeling. So do recommend Oberon number 2. Hope you guys all pick it up. And issue 1 is not sold out. So if you need to get a hold of an issue 1 and your comic shop doesn't have it, they should be able to reorder it from Diamond. So that's going to do it for this episode of Aftershock Monday. Hope everybody enjoyed it. So thanks for joining us, everybody. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcast, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com. Or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. The Comic Source is a member of the LRM Podcast Network. So when you visit the site, be sure to check out some of our other podcasts like Los Fanboys, our official movie and TV podcast hosted by Joseph Jammer Medina, Netflix and Chill, hosted by Nick and Carrie, covering a wide variety of film and television topics with Game of Thrones and Star Wars as particular favorites. And finally, Mike and Mark's Marvelous Adventures, as these two former athletes share their love of sports and geek culture by chatting about anything and everything sports and geek related. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.